And welcome to Skid Row Chatter once again. I'm glad you've tuned in and joined us for our live BouchaCon event. This year, we're doing something a little different. We're keeping our exciting live event top secret and not telling anybody. We're sequestered in a room high above the convention with only a select few authors in the room to try to fill you in on the goings-on here. In the room, I have Mr. S.W. Loudon.
Hello.
Author of, well, now it's going to be a sack, the upcoming Grizzly Season. What else do you want to mention?
Well, Grizzly Season is a follow-up to Bad Citizen Corporation.
Yes.
And then I also have a standalone novella called Crosswise that was published by Down and Out earlier this year.
World famous Down and Out. Their name keeps popping up. And I have Mr. Josh Stallings, the young American himself. Josh's book, Young American, is up for an Anthony this year, true?
Yes, it's up for two Anthonys, audiobook and first paperback, yeah.
I guess if I have to, clearly I haven't voted yet.
Yeah, dude, come on, get down there.
I'll get
there. I paid you already.
So maybe you can answer this first question. Not a test, I need to know. When are the awards? Are they Friday or Saturday?
Friday night.
Because usually they are Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday's usually in which five, whatever.
So, I would have missed that too, just like the meeting with my agent this morning.
Yeah, that was fun.
And your agent.
I took it for you.
Yeah, thank you. Put their minds at ease. Everything's all right with Tom. He's not drinking too much. Everything's going again.
He's cut way back on the heroin. Way back.
Yeah, he's on the methadone program now. Things are looking up. And soon the judge is going to let him see his kids again.
Yeah, it's all good.
So this is your – how many BouchaCons have you been to?
I'm just going to run through my head. I think there's got to be my fifth.
Fifth?
Yeah.
So your first one was –
First one was in Chicago, and it was there was a hiatus between them, and it was got to be 7-8 years ago, and amazing.
Yeah,
I got to be good friends with this up and coming fucking writer who became Charlie Houston, and he and I were the only guys with tats back then, and so because we were the only guys with tattoos, we hung out and we wound up sitting by the river smoking cigarettes and reading the newspaper together, and became great friends, and he's been kind of the biggest supporter of my career. Because that helped me with the writing. He was just a great friend.
So the bond that you made
at BouchaCon became is we've been friends since when he was in New York. When he moved to LA, we see each other. I mean, just like one of those friends. Like this is where our friends come together for me.
Yeah, it's an affirmation of the social aspect. And writing it really isn't the tortured, lonely thing that people sort of.
It's tortured, just not as lonely as I wish.
But yeah, if you're doing it right, it's a little bit lonely. But it is nice to come together on common ground. Eric Buechner once said, I can't remember how he phrased it, but since he just walked into the room, he could probably say it himself. You went to, I think it was the BouchaCon before Albany, and just the experience of like walking the halls and finally having that sort of that community feeling where you felt you sort of arrived. Not arrived, maybe that's not a good term, but you felt like you were a part finally. Eric,
hi. I think showing up at an event like this and suddenly coming out of your writing cave and being surrounded by like-minded people and the biggest thing for me was meeting other authors and people that were on my bookshelf.
Yeah.
But feeling like I was meeting them as an equal was such a validation and being treated, you know, not like you're a debut author, a newbie author, or even a wannabe published author, but meeting people that I really admired and they'd be like, Oh, you're a writer?
Yeah.
And I'd say, yeah. And they'd say, great. You know, come on in.
Yeah,
that was a really fantastic and a very valid thing as an early writer.
It still is today.
Yeah,
I mean, I find it valid. I Walter Mosley is one of my heroes. I met him today and was able to tell him his new book, Charcoal Joe, is one of the best things ever written. And that gives me so much hope as a writer that we can keep getting better and better and better and better.
Yeah.
But to be able to say that to his face and have him not go, "Who the fuck are you?"
Yeah.
Security.
Yeah.
Big crazy white guy.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, it's a jury, not necessarily judge, but a jury of your peers, nonetheless.
Yeah.
Which is nice, and it is nice that there is that multi sort of level. There's guys that are way up the food chain that you can still rub elbows with at the convention, it's not like a weird thing. I've only had security call on me once or twice, but it was in the women's restroom. A little bit.
That's understandable.
Yeah, different situation.
No, I just an hour after I arrived, I ran into Joe Lansdale in the book room. And just for me to be able to look up and go, "Hey, Joe, how you doing?"
Yeah.
And for him to say, "Hey, Eric, what's going on?"
I need to find him and apologize for the fiasco on this show when he was on. Speaking of which,
he's a freaking idol.
You have a lot of apologies.
Panowich says he's in a crazy ass elevator and he'll join us momentarily. But who I haven't heard from is Pam. Pam, can you hear us out there? Pam, our remote producer, twisting knobs and dialing dials in somewhere in undisclosed location in Florida. We'll wait to make sure because I don't want to have the same experience that we unfortunately have.
What would you say if we weren't broadcasting right now?
Why are we in this room with them?
Damn. This was my ruse to get you into my hotel room.
That's when we start talking about
stuff. Oh, wow. Oh, it got ugly so quick and dark.
Hey, thanks for joining us this week. That was a lot of fun, you guys.
And God willing, Brian, it's perhaps listening or will be at one point. I do want to defuse my barb. Because even though we've all been on Nub Nose. Well, you were embroiled being the cover guy and stuff. But some of those, I have a great part of my heart and my experience and my existence as a writer is was signing with Nub Nose. It was a big deal for me, and they still, I'm not in arrears. So I got paid, got out. I'm happy. I'm glad that they were. It was a great. If you look at the stable of writers they had around 2012,
it's amazing. Great books. And the truth that I come out of it with, because they are good people, is that it's really fucking hard to publish books, and most people don't make it. And some people, when a publishing house stays around, you go, they're doing something right. This is hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
well, some wise man earlier. the last thing you want to do is publish with writers. And I thought, well, me and Joe run Gutter Books, and that's true. And that's why we have one book dribbling out a year because there's a different focus. That's why it's awesome being with Down and Out Books. Did I mention them again? Good old Down and Out. They're having a party tonight at Cosmos, right?
Yep, 5 years strong.
Five years strong. Come on down, 7 o'clock.
Doing it right. I mean, I just look at what he's doing with Down and Out, and they're just doing it right.
Well, he brought on Lance, too, and what he's brought to the table is, like, experience in publicity and marketing and author outreach, and I think it's, like, to see the publishing company building that way behind what Eric's vision for is really fantastic.
Yeah. Helps that he wasn't a newbie.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It also helps that he's not a writer.
Writers suck, man.
We're not good at the business side.
It's true. That's why we're right. If we were good at business, we would have stayed in school and had real jobs.
Make real money.
The host is just going to walk out of the room for a minute.
No problem. This is getting very, like, inside baseball.
It is a little, maybe too inside baseball.
Talk about
Panowich is apparently lost. He says there's no room 1111. So
he's,
we are two.
He's in the wrong tower, like I was.
We were too sequestered and too secretive, apparently, in our quest to keep things under control. Last year it got a little wild. There were, I think, about 30 people in the room by the time the radio show ended, and that was the first time I had drinking the Knob Creek whiskey. Makes me a little high, I found out.
This is going through these things. By the way, I don't drink. And going through Bashkan not drinking is great because you can take notes all night long and then you can blackmail writers for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
They say all kinds of shit when they're drunk. Am I wrong?
No. Nice. Absolutely. Being the other sober guy in the room is always a wonderful thing.
Stuck in a room with three sober guys. And speaking of guys that aren't sober, we've got a caller. Let's see who's calling in here from the 305. 1 second. Hello, caller.
Hello there.
Air with
this is your producer. Paula. How are you?
Just fine.
This is your producer, Pam.
Tiny and quiet.
My voice is tiny and quiet. Boy, that's something else. I actually was calling to whine and moan that I wasn't there at BoucherCon with you guys. And, you know, I hope that you're having a really good time. And don't worry about me. I'm just fine. 28 staples in my hip. The therapist just left after giving me a pounding again today. Don't worry. I want you to have fun. That's the important thing.
Don't worry. I have to have that burden lifted from my shoulders.
Your therapist pounds
there you go.
You?
Wow.
How
much How about that? You know, get a new titanium hip, and you get to have a beating over by your physical therapist. Actually,
physical
I wanted to congratulate.
Oh, I'm back now.
Jeez. Jeez. See what happens when I'm not there? The place goes straight to hell. I want to, first of all, congratulate Josh on his two nominations. I'm pulling for you from Miami, from Florida, and I hope that you do well. We're looking forward to seeing awards on your shelves. And who else is there right now? Is Mr. Panowich there yet, or did he get lost?
Not here yet. We have Eric Beener in the room and Mr. Steve Loudon. Eric and Steve are both nominees for next year's VoucherCon. Nobody knows this yet, but we talked to Vegas odds makers, and it's looking good for both Grizzly season and what is the
ticket? Take your pick. There's like five to choose from. You got a lot of choice.
That's why the odds are good on him.
There we go. Well, I also want to welcome Eric Beener to the family of Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Eric will be beginning his own radio show with the network.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler
alert. We were saving that till the end.
No, you got to give it right up front because now everybody has to call. This is the major announcement. I mean, okay, Tom, you got your show last year. Please, I'm giving Eric his this year. Called The Dark Corner, and so I want everybody to just get a heads up on that. Have a good time there, guys. Enjoy yourself. Please don't make me embarrassed, and if you do, don't tell anyone you work for the network. Have a good time. I'm out.
I'll take off my T-shirt then. Office on the air. Never mind.
Hey,
Pam,
great.
Thanks for calling in, and thank you for providing the platform.
Yeah, take care, Pam.
Absolutely. Have fun, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Radio show?
Apparently, it's not that secret because Pam found out where we were, was able to call in. But we're actually going to put this up as a podcast when it's over, although it is playing live now and other people can call in. It's not a widely – no, because I'm doing the Omerita thing, you know. But let's get back to the nomination. This is the nominee show. Josh, you're up for two for the same book. Seems a little unfair. Seems like the game is rigged. What's going on?
I have no fucking idea. But – I think because audiobook is just such a weird thing, and they found out I had one, I don't think anybody even heard it. But they said, please, got one. I'll vote for that.
I listened to a little bit of it, but I was reading the book. So I went with the read. Sometimes I can do that with audiobooks. I'll go back and forth, like listen in the car and read while I'm in the John, that kind of thing. But yours, I was digging your voice more in my head than the reader. But the reader was good, but I always prefer because I know you. And which brings me to the age-old question of why Johnny Shaw doesn't record his own audiobooks. It's always baffled me. And they're both for young Americans.
Yeah.
Do you care to share any of the pain and suffering of your previous nominations?
No. Yeah, sure, fine. It was painful. My memoir was up for best real live, whatever it's called.
Speaking of snub-nosed books, yes.
True crime, and when your memoir's up for true crime, that's kind of fucked up. But neither here nor there. I heard Charlie Houston gave me a piece of advice before going down. He said, listen, getting an award and nominated is so important until you don't win, and then it doesn't mean shit. Walk away and don't think about it again. And like, I really did that. I went, it was so important. And then I had to console you after that because you were crying.
I did. I teared up and got misty, and you had to talk me down. And I don't know exactly what you said, but it was essentially, you know why you're misty, Tom? You know why you're choked up? Because guys like you and me never thought that they'd be published or being in the same room with all these other guys. And it's true because, I've got a rough and bumpy path. They don't call it Skid Row Chatter for nothing. And yours, well, your memoir was up for in the crime category, so it was a really, and you were one of the first, certainly the first snub-nosed book that was nominated, but you were one of the first ones kicking open the door for the neo-noir crowd, you know.
Yeah.
Was that Albany or Long Beach?
Long Beach.
Long Beach. That was my first one.
Yeah, and Shaw won in Albany, which was great. That was the big kicking open the door.
It is really cool to be just see your name up with all these cats.
Whoa.
Oh, no.
Oh, well.
Trouble's in the room.
Who the fuck decided to do that to the elevators?
I do want to
say. You and I have to step out, though.
FCC aside, we are live. We are joined in the room by Mr. Brian Panovich, also up for an award, which is kind of the point you guys are here. We're trying to curry favor with the listeners. And Jordan Harper.
Hey.
Are you up for an award this year?
No, you're not sitting in the bathroom. I'm wearing a bum shirt, too. How about that?
A neo bum?
Yes. You want the sword?
Yeah.
You can go ahead and put it out there up front.
But you got to get closer to the microphone.
You got
to
smell a little funny. We had two. I had a lunch with my agent and Jordan. We share an agent.
Right.
And so the lunch was.
You've got enough agents to go around. You can share them.
Yes. the girth on my agent. You should see it. Anyway.
We have a very svelte Canadian agent. So we three share an agent.
We do.
Wow.
Wow. I like a trio, like a threesome. Going on.
That's not making it weird.
Just keep it normal.
Entirely too small. Okay, so anyways, the place that we're meeting at is called the Commander's Place. Anybody been to there?
No.
Okay.
Palace?
Yeah.
Palace.
Whatever, man. So we get there, and I'm in a T-shirt. You're not allowed to wear just a T-shirt in the place.
Yes.
You have to have a collared shirt.
It is a palace.
I don't own a collared shirt, Tom.
I believe you.
Much less one that I would have brought with me to the palace. So they wouldn't let me in. My wife had to go in pee, so she was in there. Everybody's waiting. You waited on me, actually, for a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Lying.
So anyway, no, I turn around and I go, I say, all right, so okay, I'll figure it out. And I'm walking around looking at maybe there's a boutique shop or whatever. I can just buy something quick on the fly. Yeah. There's not. Closest place is several blocks away, and I'm by Uber, yada, yada, yada. So I see this dude walking across the street. And I said, excuse me, I give you $50 for your shirt. And he kept walking, and, you know, cause
yeah, crazy guy.
That, right?
Yeah.
And so I explained to him my situation, and he's like, he tried to like negotiate. I was like, dude, all I have, I got $50. Like,
you should have started with, I'll pay you $50 to see your nipples. Then the shirt
would
have gone right
yeah.
off.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it. If I went straight from the nipples, Tom.
Straight from the nipples.
I always forget that.
It's yeah. Tom's answer for everything.
Well, I mean, good life lessons should be big.
In fighting and in love.
Yeah, so anyway, so I'm wearing a stranger shirt, and then we got here and had to play the alphabet soup game to get to the room. So
oh, my gosh. The elevators are, cryptic sort of maze. I thought I was going to have to answer some sort of riddle even to get out of it.
It's like Edward Nygma at the hotel. Jesus Christ, right? What happened back there?
Well, it's just, I don't know where the problem was in the elevator system where somebody said, this is a problem I need to solve.
Yeah.
I've got a better idea.
These chronological numbers are bullshit.
That's just not working. That's not working. It's all
the up and down. Fuck that. Let's throw in some letters.
You're
jack
going
it
down.
All up. Especially if that retard from Georgia is coming.
So sticking with the theme of the show, we're currying favor, swinging boats. I'm like the mayor of Chicago. I'm going to swing this election for you, Mr. Kennedy.
Please.
You're up for Bull Mountain. A lot of attack. It seems like, I mean, I don't know whether I read the book the week it came out. I know I didn't. I thought it had been out a while when I read it. But it seems like it's been out since about 2010. What's going on?
It does, man. It does seem that it's been out for. It came out in July of 2015. But I've been living
really?
With it for a while. Huh. Came out. That's why.
I read it last BadgerCon, actually. I came here coming back
right,
on a plane,
right.
And I got all choked up.
Well,
at the end.
It was like two months. It had come out 2 months prior to BadgerCon,
yeah.
So nobody knew who I was or who the book was at that point, man. And I was like getting to meet you guys for the first time.
Yeah.
I told somebody a story about you in the elevator on the way up here. Is that true?
It is true.
Yep. Well, my favorite moment from BadgerCon, and I can get to that. But
left out the nipples,
I had no idea what the book was going to do or what was going to happen with it. But I sat next to Joe Clifford.
Yeah.
He was nominated last year for best novel.
Oh yeah,
for
we're up in the roped off area.
Yeah. and it was me and him and Tom Franklin. And we Joe didn't win. But he was such a classy act, and he walked out and he's like, next year it belongs to you, man, it belongs to you. And I was like, no way. And now I get to lose in front of Joe, and it works out
you're a
circle.
You're a contender because you've got the proverbial buzz going on because the book. Great book, first of all.
Thanks, man.
But it's carried and the because the buzz is has been it. Going since it came out. What's the story with it now? Movie rights.
It's currently in production at USA for a television show.
For a television show?
Right, for sure.
Wow.
They see the potential of making it a character series. That's what they're
good.
It's in, like, the script is done, the executives have it, and we have some casting done, and we have a director.
I
really don't have jack shit
to
do with
it. Yeah, you have to let go.
I had to make that decision right up front. If they're going to do it, then I can't be married to it, because I know I at least have a kind of an idea of how that politic works.
Yeah.
For playing music for a long time. Once you get a whole bunch of chefs in it, becomes shit. So I stepped back. And luckily, the guy who's writing it and the showrunner, Ed Bernero, he's an ex-cop who fell into the business by complete accident, much like a fireman who fell into it by complete accident. So we have that kindred thing going on, and so he's very respectful. He runs everything by me, and although he's taken some liberties and turned it into something else, it's still great.
Yeah.
So I figured I had two ways to look at it. Like, it could suck, and I could say, well, I don't have nothing to do with it. I wrote the book. The book is forever. Or if it's great, I could say, well, you're damn right it's great. So either way, if I stepped back from it and let them do whatever they wanted, I win.
Well, let's get back to something you actually do have a handle on. What's going on with the sequel?
I just turned it in 3 days ago.
Wow.
Thank you. That's 1 year
late.
It's almost
like I prepared for this thing.
1 year.
That's not bad.
That's the deadline. I wrote 4 novels before I turned this one in to him as the second one. Like, after I wrote Bull Mountain, I wrote a follow-up, and then I wrote another one.
They were all tied to?
And then I wrote another one.
Yeah.
And all 3 of them I wasn't happy with. So I went to New York for the Thriller Fest, and I don't know what happened, but I got, I just got bolt of lightning, struck me, I got inspired, and I went home.
You stole somebody's idea.
Yeah. Exactly. I heard Lee Child talking about something.
A tall stranger just got up on Bull Mountain.
We're Smith. He can do cool shit. He's not really tall either. That's the only way to film him.
Yeah, I mean, he's tall, like Tom Cruise tall.
No, I had it hit me. I said, oh my God, the thing that isn't working, there it is. And I outlined the whole shit on the plane on the way home, and I wrote the new novel in 2 months, and I gave it in to my agent 3 days ago.
Yeah,
I got his notes, like, right? Oh my God, I lost his notes, Jordan.
Oh, that bum took him.
He gave me his notes today at lunch and said, do this, and then we'll turn it in.
Killer.
When you say did you literally throw out and start from scratch, or did you like heavily revise?
It's gone.
Delete and start over.
Right. Delete, start over.
Well, save file and start a new file.
Right.
Okay. Just be clear.
That's a better way to say that. Because no telling what I'm going to need, you know, to auction off.
Because they're going to want a third one.
To pay for food someday.
Yeah, your archive.
Right.
Jordan.
Yeah.
What's going on with you?
Well, I have my novel is coming out sometime in the next 6 to 8 to 9 months. Nobody seems to know. It gets moved around a lot. It's called She Rides Shotgun, and it'll be coming out. And then I sold the film rights to it, and as a contingency on the deal, I said I had to write the screenplay.
And how's that going for you?
Well, real good, because I turned in the first draft, which was basically the novel in script form, and they said, well, why did you give us the novel?
That's insane.
No, I do understand it. You know, they want to make it more like a big budget film.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Since I'm having, I won't talk about it on the air, but I'm having some of my own personal scripting adaptation issues right now.
Yeah.
How long was that for a script that you just ended, and they said, why did you give us a novel? Was it in that?
It was in the ballpark. It was in 120 something pages.
Well, then good for you. Like, never mind my troubles.
Oh, did you turn it something long?
No, I didn't get turn anything. That someone was is sniffing around hustling. They had someone turn the whole book into a script, and it's my job to go in and keep chopping it down. And so all the exposition was still there in between all the dialogue. You know, it's in final draft time, so I had to go through it. So it's
they
all
gave that back to you. Right? They said, oh, look what we did for you, Tom. Now kill it.
Yeah, now kill it all. But so, yeah. So, okay, I got a 240-page script, same as the novel. Now I got to cut it down to 120 pages.
Oh, yeah.
So, and that's touching on what I was talking about, man, about how it's different. Like, it's different but still good. It's It has to be. It has to be, man.
Yeah.
Because if they had taken Bull Mountain and turned it into a chapter by chapter, show by show, you know, I was telling him, man, that people around the world would be in the bathroom, like eating bullets, and crying, and there's just no humor there. But that being said, what he did to it was able to make it good dramatic television. There's not enough cliffhangers in my book from chapter to chapter in order to keep that kind of
the pacing issue is always I thought relatively well paced, but when you start thinking things in script form, you really do have to rethink.
On your best day, Tom, you can't read a book in 2 hours, man. Not one of any great length. And so think on that. Is any movie going to be 11 hours long? Other than
True.
I'm working with a movie producer named Walter Parks, who's an amazing guy. He wrote Sneakers, he wrote War Games, and then he produced stuff like Gladiator and Collateral. And so I am getting this like amazing crash course. I make jokes about they want to Hollywoodize my novel, but there's an actual art to turning something into a Hollywood ready thing, and it's about externalizing all the things we get internalized as writers. You're inside the person's head, you can say everything they're thinking. This you need to be able to, how can you take this entire three paragraphs of beautiful metaphors about their internal state of mind and turn that into a single action that can be acted out on a screen?
Because a picture's worth a thousand words, baby.
Well, yes, a picture's worth a thousand words. You just gotta know how to get those thousand words.
I can't imagine that would not be a good exercise to be able to reapply to what you're doing in the first place.
Well, exactly. And, I'm working on the second novel right now, and already from working with Walter, I'm thinking, how can I make everybody understand who these characters are on page one, more so than I normally would?
So you're saying you're already thinking cinematically from page one?
Yeah, and I think I tend to write fairly cinematically anyway, which is why I think it was a fairly easy movie deal and why the book actually came in at the appropriate length.
Do you write, is you write shotgun in third person?
It's, what do you call that, close third person? We switched point of view a few times.
I like switching constantly. I just feel that novels that are in first person, even though people like to think they would make a great film, it's much easier to visualize third person because you have that shift, because that's what you do in movies.
Well,
you're not
inside
somebody's head.
44 person. 40, 45 or 6 person.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, right?
Yeah, well, that's
amazing.
I was
amazed you pulled that off.
Yeah, I am too.
Still to this day, since 2010, I still can't believe that the novel is still kicking.
What first-person novels do is you end up doing a bunch of voiceover because you want to transmit the character that way because it's in the book, right?
Like the Muppets?
Well, like Goodfellas.
Okay.
Much better example.
Which is so
Muppets, Goodfellas, Muppets.
We all have our own catalog to draw from.
Just pick one Muppet, Tom. Just one. Have sex. Which one would it be?
Animal. That question took a weird turn.
Oh, come on. The bass player from the band.
Wait.
The
Joni Mitchell.
Yeah.
Her name's Janet.
And I think it's totally respectful for you to talk about Janet like that because everybody knows she's got something going on in the family.
I'm going to
go with Dr. Keith.
Dr. Keith?
Yeah, he's hot.
Yeah.
Well, you just don't want him to,
Listen, I'm into my thing, you're into your thing.
I've got a 9-year-old daughter.
I took it the other way!
I think one of the most important lessons I learned, because I screenwrote for years and years before I ever attempted a novel, and I think one of the overriding rules, if you want to call it, of screenwriting is that character is action. And I think I think more novelists could take that to heart, and you'd get tighter novels and just more efficient storytelling when you realize that character is defined more by the things that people do than the things that they say, and by the things that they think to themselves, or God forbid you put in a dream sequence that's supposed to give me some sort of insight into your character. It's like, no, have the way that they behave be who they are.
That sounded nice. In theory, you should be able to extrapolate that to novel writing too, but
I wish more people did. I mean, I think I've definitely encountered way too many novels that try to lay it all out in that internal dialogue. And, whether it's they're thinking to themselves or whether it's just you have a long scene of them walking along the street and sort of thinking about maybe an action that just took place. And
pet peeve with a lot of books I read. It's too much exposition, not enough.
I think ultimately becomes unnecessary. It's like if that person, if they leave one situation where they just, picked up a new piece of information and now the next action of the book is they're going to act on that information.
Yeah.
A lot of the temptation is to have them sort of think it out and rationalize it and sort of formula to plan, whatever that is. Whereas I think if you have them immediately turn and react to that information, however they react is going to inform you as much about their character as whatever thing you put in their head.
Or, and importantly, it's going to inform you enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't. Yeah. You don't need the whole iceberg. You just like Hemingway iceberg theory. You only need to show people that much if it's the right amount.
Yeah.
They'll figure out the rest on their own.
And I'm sorry to take it away from the Muppet sex.
I don't have any idea what's going on.
You know, the SEC doesn't regulate this show. You can curse, you can swear, you can take the Lord's name in vain, but it's kind of a line you cross there, man. We're gonna have to go back and do some editing.
Be a lot of editing.
Yeah.
I was shut up when guys start talking about what, like, shit that they know about. I don't know much about it, man.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you about how Uber is destroying our economy. Let's start there.
I didn't go to college. I came apart. And what I discovered as a writer is people would say, I don't know how you broke this rule, but it's so cool. And I'm going, there's a fucking rule?
If you have no idea the rules exist, it's easy as shit to break them.
You can't do that? You can't have two first persons in a novel, really? One in present tense and the other in past tense?
I have a tendency to I don't know what the term is. But when you're writing in someone's, like, all right, you're starting a chapter off about one particular character.
Right.
You're writing in third person that character.
But it's still their point of view.
Right, their point of view. I have a tendency to jump right into somebody else's point of view in the middle of that chapter and then get back to that.
I do constantly.
All the time.
I do constantly, and I think that's how they're thinking cinematically.
And I told them that Bull Mountain did pretty fucking well.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, that I do that constantly, and I think because, at least in my brain, I've got my own movie going on in my head.
I'm
trying to get you to see my movie, and that's the way that I'm directing my flick. It's got to jump from character to character, and I've never written a longer piece.
Knuckleball works really well like that, I thought, jumping from character to character like that.
Yeah, and I didn't realize it was a hard, well, I learned very quickly starting out that, well, you at least got to break up. Paragraphs.
There's a book by Marcus Seki called The Amateurs, which is that is a textbook on changing POVs, multiple POVs in the chapter. It's really about like four or five characters can be, you see the same action from all these different POVs, and you know it's separated by indents and double spaces and whatever. But he tracks that masterfully. It's the kind of thing like if you were ever to teach, you could pull a chapter of that book out and be like, this is how you do it correctly.
Because, like you say, it's the same thing they're saying from different viewpoints.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a cool idea.
I've literally never done it. Literally. I guess that is a rule I have so thoroughly internalized.
Get some
you need to break it.
Come on, goddammit. No, really?
No, I'll do it. But I'll do different chapters, but I've never done, like...
I'm trying to think of...
that's probably
why he's in a bar with the
It's always been from one
person. Clearly. You guys play by the rules.
He's running with Walter Parks,
and we're sitting in a goddamn room here. What the fuck? Speakers was fucking awesome.
Did he get the money yet? Can we just kick his ass?
No, you can't kick his ass.
Let me know when he has the money.
He's a ninja, too.
Oh, fuck.
He's not even going to tell you that.
And, you know, whatever serves the story.
I think you also, you know, there's breaking rules, but there's something in developing your own style that, mm-hmm. you know, if that's your style, that's what works. I have a very strict, like,
I
need
like to
jump
that.
Speaking of rules, I do need to say at the midpoint of every broadcast, this is a copyrighted podcast solely owned by Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, so try soon if you won't be able to. And I want to remind listeners, if there are any out there, give us a call in, guest call in at 347-633-9609. That's 347-633-9609. But since this is mostly going up after the fact, there might be Rob Pierce out there sitting lonely, sad that he's not here. He might be listening. Give us a call, Rob, if you care to. And I'm sorry I interrupted you. You had some sort of insight you wanted to share?
I wanted to just address Eric was talking about whatever serves the story, man. That's not necessarily true.
Uh-oh.
I've always wrote stories for fun. Always. Never had any lofty intent of being a writer. So I always feel like I'm the guy that doesn't necessarily need to be sitting at the party. I really felt like that last year. This year is a little bit different because I've come to know some people who are awesome. But when I got to the point where I had a publisher offering me money to put my book in stores that would actually pay some of my bills and my children would benefit from, what serves the story and what serves the publisher
kind of have to intersect.
Oh, absolutely.
And so 23-year-old Bryant probably would have, you know, stood up with righteous indignation and stormed out of the room and said, "What serves the story?" 43-year-old Bryant said, "Yeah, whatever. What serves y'all? let's get it out there so that I can get this career started."
Right. Well, I totally agree with that, because I think that what serves the story ultimately is what's going to serve the readers. Because I had a similar experience where I had, you know, my novel, The Devil Doesn't Want Me, was originally alternating first person and third person. And I thought it worked fine. I thought it was quite a novel little invention. I've seen it before. It's not like I created it. But, the first person that read it said, "I'm not telling you to change it, but this kind of bumped to me."
Right.
And it was like, well, you know, let's send it. That was my agent at the time. And then I'll send it out. The first publisher that read it said, "Yeah, no, we really like it. I'm not so sure about this first and third." And I immediately said, "Done, changed. Now it's all
well,
third."
Yeah, so you get it. So I'm not the only.
Yeah,
sellout.
But in that sense, like what served the story was having it not bump to the reader.
Right.
Right. Well, I had to also, like, I know how my mind works, and my mind might be perfectly aligned with Tom's and Jordan's, but right, as far as like an industry,
yeah,
I don't know what the hell is going on out there in the world. So, I mean, it's really up to professionals to be able to handle that and say, you know what, man, if you want more people to be able to relate to the story,
yep,
then you need to follow a couple of these rules that you think are bullshit. And so that's what happens.
But there is a line, I think, you have to at some point trust your gut, because you can't just mold something for someone else's expectations, because, yeah, I mean, we know from music you end up with, you know, like, well, maybe if we put a conga in the background and, you know, maybe a saxophone. I hear saxophones, and you keep on trying to compromise, and you don't trust your gut. There's, you know, but
well, don't you think you can go the other way,
Santana?
Because I mean, not to speak ill of the dead, but everybody, when Prince died, got very upset because of albums he made 20 years ago,
right,
back when maybe he wasn't a record executive, as opposed to the last decade or two where he would put out these triple albums,
yeah,
that probably would have made really, really good single albums,
yeah,
if there was anybody in the world who could tell Prince, "Hey, Prince, maybe not a triple album." You know? And so I feel like at the beginning of your career, you need to break all those rules.
There you go.
I broke into television the exact same way of, like, I wrote a spec script of The Shield to get in the Warner Brothers Writers Workshop. I didn't know a thing about television. I didn't know I shouldn't have written a Shield spec because it was going off the air. I didn't know that you can't.
Number one.
Take a minute and let that breathe.
Let that sink in out there. Make sure the show's going.
That's right. I didn't know, like, I mean, it was full of, because it was about white power killers, it had a bunch of N-words and racial slurs, and I didn't know that you probably shouldn't have a shotgun toddler as your teaser out. And it got me into the,
yeah,
Warner Brothers Writers Workshop. If I had not gotten in that year, and I had been in Hollywood for a year and learned all the rules and written a hot spec and done,
yeah,
a Mad Men and done what everybody else did, I don't know if I ever would have broken into TV, because I would have been boring.
Yeah.
And those people are so shocked to see people break the rules that it's interesting. Now, but I still think that impulse later on in your career, you have to tailor it in when you know what you're doing. Then you've got to start listening to other people, or you become that bloated person who doesn't take notes.
Yes, or becomes too heavy, man, and it just breaks your brain and you don't do anything.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
which happens a lot,
yeah,
you know, and that's why there's a lot of, like, one-shot wonders out there, man, which I might even be one of yet, because I don't even know. But that happens, man. I mean, you put out your book. I put out Bull Mountain with no expectation at all.
Right.
I didn't give a fuck if anybody read it. I didn't know if anybody ever would. The idea that my novel would be read before, like, Joe's or anybody who had already been in the business trying and worked so hard at it for so long was insane to me. There's no way it could possibly happen. But when it did,
yeah,
then there's, like, all the pressure of having to follow up with that. And
mm-hmm,
now you're following up with that, and you're doing it from a point of success or achievement in front of all of your people that you used,
yeah,
to be part of the club,
yeah,
you know, and you're hoping that you still are. It's a fucked up feeling, man.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and then that is enough stress to break the juggers in half. A guy named Charles Saylor wrote a book called The Second Son. Anybody read that, man? It's a brilliant novel. But that's what happened to him. He put out this book, man. It killer acclaim. Everybody loved it. They made a movie out of it. They were going to make a movie out of it. He ended up killing himself because he couldn't handle the pressure of the fucking business or being able to think that he could do better.
It's like we were talking about the sophomore curse with bands. You know,
yeah,
the thing about you're
yeah,
in a band, you have 10 years of gigging and stuff. You got all these songs gathered up. becomes a hit. You're on the road. Suddenly they want a second record. You used all your best stuff for the first record. And,
right.
And you have the real, you know, I can't write. I used to write in my bedroom, and now you're in hotel rooms all the time. I think the same thing is true with writers. But I think the biggest, bigger killer, this is the way you lay it out, is the guys, when you buy into your own press. That's the Hemingway thing, you know. Like, because Hemingway, if you look at him, I mean, all his shit was, his best stuff happened right at the start. And afterwards, he was scrambling, pulling out his hair, trying to, you know, to recapture that, and he never could.
I found that really screwed with me. When I wrote Bad Citizen Corporation, the first Greg Salem book, it was just me for 5 years and with a computer going, I'll self-publish this. It's a story that's in my head. I don't really care what happens to it.
Yeah.
Or I didn't have any expectations for what was going to happen to it. Then when I wrote the second book in the series, Grizzly Season, I sent it to a couple beta readers, and some of the notes I got back were Greg Salem wouldn't do this and Greg Salem wouldn't do that. And I was like, what?
There you go.
I'm God, motherfucker.
You fucking know.
It really messed with me. I'm curious. So when
but
you,
now that it doesn't belong to you anymore.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you put it out there, and now
right.
the world owns it.
Right.
So now you got people that you cannot let down.
Right.
And you know what? Some people do it all the time. Greg, what's his name? George R. R. Martin. Killed his, you like him? I'm going to kill him. I mean, that's his rule.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, once you create a character that people are invested in, man, you have a responsibility to them now.
I agree.
But you know
I
what,
agree.
Though? He won't kill the ones they really love. He won't kill Tyrion. He won't kill Arya.
Yep.
Nah, he won't do it. I mean, maybe in the last book, but
he won't kill the ones he really loves.
Yeah,
and that's like Cormac would.
Right.
but that's it. Now that I have those kind of notes coming back,
mm-hmm.
And you know what I'm talking about. It's tough to say, well fuck you guys, man.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do it this way.
Yeah.
Because you know you don't want those people to feel like you turned on them. But at the same time, you don't want to write a book that's pandering to anybody either.
Well, you know,
you know?
It's
that's why I wrote 4 fucking novels.
Yeah, yeah you were stressed about it.
Right.
It's the old, you know, someone tells you, you got a tail, you don't really have to think about it. But if everybody's telling you got a tail, you better
mm-hmm.
turn around and check your ass.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's kind of what it comes down to, like you were saying. With, you know, like one person says that format didn't work, but 2, 3, all right, you have
yeah.
to listen. And I think we all have to be open enough to it's being open to criticism, it's being open to suggestions, and it's you know, and it's not.
It's also there's so many decisions in writing a novel, and it's knowing which are the important ones. There's some you fight for, and whether or not you want first person or third person is not one I would fight for.
Right.
It's just not one worth dying over because it's really a style thing. I like it as an author, but it's a style thing.
If you're a story guy, you give a shit.
Yeah. Right. You know. Right. But if you want to take out a character I'm in love with, like Valentina in Young Americans, you want to take that out, I'm going to go to the wall for you.
Yeah.
Because that's why I wrote the damn thing.
Yeah.
But if you want me to change style, what the fuck? So it's really knowing which are the ones that are important.
Let's just break it down. Yeah, you guys, fuck out. Let me tell you how it works.
Are we all just going to gloss over the fact that Steve basically took up, like, oh, just like Hemingway, and then he started talking about his book?
What? No, I never said anything about Hemingway.
Hey, Steve, that hat has a really long bill on
the
front.
Hemingway.
What's that about?
He's like, oh, yeah, Steve Hemingway. Let me tell you about
that
right.
That is not what I meant.
You asked me to call him Papa. I don't know what the fuck that's about.
That wasn't about Hemingway.
Hi, Papa. I'm a Steve.
I love it when you call me Big Papa.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, we can wrap this if you like. This is going to be available for the general public momentarily, and except for Rod Pierce, who's listening live. And I thank you all. It was better than I could imagine because I really wasn't sure whether we were going to be able to broadcast at all.
Rob Pierce?
Rob Pierce isn't here.
Did you say he was listening live?
I'm guessing.
Let's fucking hope so. I got a story in Trouble in the Heartland. You should go buy that.
Oh,
for that guy's story. It's fucking brilliant.
Speaking of breaking the rules.
Yeah, breaking the rules.
Not just his story.
Just his story.
Fuck everything else in there.
Fuck everything else in there.
This
the
is
book.
How you piss off every writer in town.
Dish the whole anthology.
Yeah,
yep.
I that story anthology. 5 times.
I don't even know why them guys put it out that Zelmer pulls fuck.
Zelmer? Who is Zelmer anyway?
What did you say? Rob's story. The press.
So I'm going to sign off, but I wanted to once again reiterate the purpose of our little meeting here, which is the curry favorite, curry boats, and swing the Anthony's our way. Josh Shelling's up for 2, count them, 2, for Young Americans on both counts, both audiobook and
paperback.
Boom! What is your official category, Brian Panowich?
Debut novel, I believe. First novel. Best first.
I think it's
that
debut.
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 I'm up the
butt.
He's on the debut novel.
He's up the butt.
That's not no.
Jordan Harper, who, you know, his trajectory is too steep for me to even calibrate.
Jordan Harper, who has a book coming out in
someday.
The future.
Yeah. And that was called award caliber work, apparently. Who's the judge?
2018. We'll be on the ballot.
Yes.
And other future BajaCon Anthony nominees, Eric Beatner and S.W. Lawton.
Also known as, like Hemingway
2.0?
Yeah. Hemingway 2.0.
The W stands for Hemingway.
We can't spell for shit. And thank you once again for tuning in to Skid Row Chatter. We hope to see you all downstairs here at the Marriott in fabulous, sweaty, moist New Orleans. Have a good night. And, I'm going to have to play the outro music. I did have a producer here, but suddenly he's gone all Hemingway on me, so I'm going to have to do it myself.
Can I shot myself?
That would be fucking crazy.
Like that.
Watch it now. I had to